Mentioned the study that we have been having have been for the purpose of coming to into harmony and unity on the subject of health reform, and we've covered about six studies, or five to be correct, and we've basically covered what I intended to cover, and no doubt throughout all this time different questions have arisen. In introducing our time of question and answer, I would just like to read this beautiful article on health reform to be introduced carefully. Statement from Sister White here in Manuscript Releases, Volume 2, page 103. And I thought it was so beautiful that I want to read these pages to you, and that will give us an inspirational state of mind as to this sometimes controversial subject in some people's minds. I thought this was a good way of introducing this time together and also to help us understand what the intent of our health lectures really have been, so that we would be in a balanced approach to this subject. There's some good questions that have already been posed. If you've got others, please make sure that you don't let us pass by without answering those questions. So there's about four pages of this, but it's all big sort of gaps in there, so it shouldn't be too long. I fully believe, Sister White writes, that the end of all things is at hand. She wrote that back there in 1959. When did she write that? I always find when she says things like that, in 1881 she wrote that. 1881, I fully believe that the end of all things is at hand. That really makes you think. If that was back there, where are we today? And I can really believe what she is saying, because we are now at the end of all things. She says, all things is at hand, we are now in it, after all, from that time that she saw it. So we are in the midst of the end of all things. And every power that God has given us should be employed in the very wisest and highest service to God. So everything we're doing should be to the uppermost of wisdom, the wisest and highest service. The Lord has brought out a people from the world to fit them not only for a pure and holy heaven, but to prepare them through the wisdom he shall give them to be co-laborers with God in preparing a people to stand in the day of God. Incidentally, we've just made a decision in the committee that our conference at the end of the year is going to be entitled along this very train of thought, that we are in the days of preparation for the final things. So the Lord has brought us to fit us up, to prepare us through the wisdom he shall give to prepare a people to stand in the day of God. This is the message for our time, to be prepared for the day of God. Great light has been given upon health reform, but it is essential for all to treat this subject with candor and to advocate it with wisdom. In the health reform principles, I have seen so much extremism, one way and the other, and so much pushiness to bring people under a expectancy, presenting to people advanced things which they were not able to digest. So this must be done with candor and advocated in wisdom. In our experience, we have seen many who have not presented health reform in a manner to make the best impression upon those whom they wish should receive their views. The Bible is full of wise counsel, and even the eating and drinking receive proper attention. The highest privilege that man can enjoy is to be a partaker of the divine nature, and faith that binds us in strong relationship to God will so fashion and mold mind and conduct that we become one with Christ. I love the way Sister White always talks about health reform in the concept of a saving gospel message. That's the way she put it there again. No one should, through intemperate appetite, so indulge his taste as to weaken any of the fine works of the human machinery, and thus impair the mind or the body. Man is the Lord's purchased possession. If we are partakers of the divine nature, we will live in communion with our Creator and value all of God's work, which led David to exclaim, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." So you notice the divine nature, the atonement, we have to become at one with the divine nature. We will live in communion with our Creator and value all of God's work. We will not consider the organs of the body our own property, as if we had created them. All the faculties God has given to the human body are to be appreciated. You are not your own, for you are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. We are not to treat unwisely any faculty of mind, soul, or body. We cannot abuse any of the delicate organs of the human body without having to pay the penalty because of transgression of nature's laws. Bible religion brought into practical life ensures the highest culture of the intellect. Temperance is exalted to a high level in the Word of God. Obeying His Word, we can rise higher and still higher. The danger of intemperance is specified. The advantage to be gained by temperance is laid open before us all through the Scriptures. The voice of God is addressing us, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." The example of Daniel is presented for us to study carefully. What should we do with the example of Daniel? We have to study it carefully and learn the lessons that God has for us to learn in this example given us in sacred history. That's why we sing that song, "Dare to be a Daniel," in regards to temperance. We wish to present temperance and health reform from a Bible standpoint. For those of you that were there right in the beginning, this is the way we laid the foundation. We looked at the Bible and we got Bible simplicity. And to be very cautious, so we wish to present temperance and health reform from a Bible standpoint and be very cautious not to go to extremes in abruptly advocating health reform. Not to go to extremes and abruptly advocate health reform. Let us be careful not to graft into health reform one false shoot according to our own peculiar overstrained ideas. and weave into it our own strong traits of character, making these as the voice of God, and passing judgment on all who do not see as we do. It takes time to educate away from wrong habits. And I really want to hone in on this statement, that we take to heart what the Spirit of God is saying to us here. It says, we are to be very cautious not to go to extremes. Let us be careful not to graft into the health reform one false shoot. What could be one false shoot? According to our own peculiar overstrained ideas. Now this we should take very seriously. We can have overstrained ideas on health reform. And weave into it our own strong traits of character. Did you notice it's possible to have such a strong character in what you are adopting into the health reform messages, that as a strong character that we may be, we take it so strongly and make what our strong character has picked up as God's voice. This I have seen happen. Be careful not to do that. And then thinking that what my strong ideas are about health reform, I pass judgment on those who do not see as I do. It takes time to educate from wrong habits. So in God's church, we are not laying tests, and you'll see as we keep on going here, that there are many people who put down tests of diet and health, that we are not to put down. It is education that we're concentrating on. Questions are coming in from brethren and sisters making inquiries in regard to health reform. Statements are made that some are taking the light in the testimonies upon health reform and making it a test. They select statements made in regard to some articles of diet that are presented as objectionable. Statements written in warning and instruction to certain individuals who were entering or had entered on an evil path. So Sister White writes things that she addresses to people who were entering onto an evil path. And those statements are then used and applied to our educational processes. So she says, they select statements made in regard to some articles of diet that are presented as objectionable statements because they were written to people who were entering into an evil path. They dwell on these things and make them as strong as possible, weaving their own peculiar objectionable traits of character in with these statements and carry them with great force, thus making them a test and driving them where they do only harm. This is a danger when we really want to accept the health reform in all its advancement, that we can be in this category. To use statements of Sister White that are a strong rebuke on somebody's evil practices, and then we use those statements to drive hard the health reform message. This is what we've got to be careful of. The meekness and lowliness of Christ is wanting. Moderation and caution are greatly needed, but they have not these desirable traits of character. They need to mold the mold of God upon them. And this is where courtesy comes in, as we've been studying. The mould of God. And such persons may take health reform and do great harm with it in prejudicing minds so that ears will be closed to the truth. We can actually prejudice minds by going into sharp, judgmental health reform detail. Health reform, wisely treated, will prove an entering wedge where the truth may follow with marked success. It's supposed to be the entering wedge, not something harsh and dictatorial. But to present health reform unwisely, making that subject the burden of the message, has served to create prejudice with unbelievers and to bar the way to the truth, leaving the impression that we are extremists. Now the Lord would have us wise and understanding as to what is His will. We must not give occasion for us to be regarded as extremists. This will place us and the truth God has given us to bear to the people at a great disadvantage. Through weaving in unconsecrated self, that which we are ever to present as a blessing becomes a stumbling block. We see those who will select from the testimonies the strongest expressions and without bringing in or making any account of the circumstances under which the cautions and warnings are given. Remember, Sister White says, right, consider time and place. There it is here. Not considering the circumstances under which the cautions and warnings are given, make them of force in every case. Thus they produce unhealthy impressions upon the minds of the people. There are always those who are ready to grasp anything of a character which they can use to rein up people to a close, severe test, and who will work elements of their own character into the reforms. This, at the very outset, raises the combativeness of the very ones they might help if they dealt carefully, bearing healthful influence which could carry the people with them. They will go at the work making a raid upon the people. Picking up some things in the testimonies, they drive them upon everyone and disgust rather than win souls. They make divisions when they might and should make peace. I have been shown the danger of families that are of an excitable temperament, the animal predominating. Their children should not be allowed to make eggs their diet. For this kind of food, eggs and animal flesh, feeds and inflames the animal passions. Now she uses an example here, that she makes some strong statements against milk and eggs for certain people who should not use them because they are a highly excitable temperament people. This makes it very difficult for them to overcome the temptation by eating flesh and eggs to indulge in the sinful practices of self-abuse, which in this age is almost universally practiced. This practice weakens the physical, mental and moral powers and bars the way to everlasting life. Some families were shown to me as in a deplorable condition. Because of this debasing sin, they are where the truth of God cannot find access to the heart or mind. This practice leads to deception, to falsehood, to licentious practices, and to corrupting and polluting of other minds. And so on. These evils so prevalent led me to make the statements that I have made. So the strong statements that she has made in certain foods was because of the self-abuse that is practiced so widely. So now you get the impression of what she's saying. Thus they become, the special reproofs were presented in warnings to others. Thus they came before other families than the very individuals corrected and reproved. But let the testimonies speak for themselves. Let not the individuals gather up the very strongest statements given for individuals and families and drive these things because they want to use the whip and to have something to drive. So we mustn't use the statements that Sister White uses to these families and use it on a general principle. Let these active, determined temperaments take the word of God and the testimonies which present the necessity of forbearance and love and perfect unity and labor zealously and perseveringly. With their own hearts softened and subdued by the grace of Christ, with their own spirits humble and full of the milk of human kindness, they will not create prejudice, neither will they cause dissension and weaken the churches. The question whether we shall eat butter, meat, or cheese is not to be presented to anyone as a test, but that we are to educate and to show the evils of the things that are objectionable. You see the educate principle there. Those who gather up these things and drive them upon others do not know what work they are doing. The word of God has given tests to his people. What are they? The keeping of God's holy law, the Sabbath, is a test, a sign between God and his people throughout their generations forever. Forever, this is the burden of the third angel's message, the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ. Tea, coffee, tobacco and alcohol we must present as sinful indulgences. We cannot place on the same ground meat, eggs, butter, cheese and such articles placed upon the table. So can you see Sister White puts tobacco, coffee, tea and alcohol on a different level than meat, eggs, butter, cheese, etc. Then she says, these are not to be borne in front as the burden of our work. The former, tea, coffee, tobacco, beer, wine, and all spirituous liquors, are not to be taken moderately, but discarded. The poisonous narcotics are not to be treated in the same way as the subject of eggs, butter, and cheese. In the beginning, animal food was not designed to be the diet of man. We have every evidence that the flesh of dead animals is dangerous because of disease that is fast becoming universal, because of the curse resting more heavily in consequences of the habits and crimes of man. We are to present the truth. We are to be guarded how to use reason and select those articles of food that will make the very best blood and keep the blood in an unfevered condition. So this is the beautiful balanced approach to health reform that Sister White was inspired to write. That came from Book 2 of Manuscript Releases, starting from page 103. And there you can see why we have studied the things of the health reform the way we have over the past 5 lectures. So that we have this intelligent understanding and we looked at it educationally, and this is the way we are to speak as a church. That we educate the people and we don't drive them into a state of guilt if, for instance, they are still eating meat or if they are eating milk and eggs and things like that, but that we show them a intelligent educational process. And for people to be members of this church, we have now added a test to our health reform message, and that is flesh eating is a test in our church. But that's only because of what I've just read here. We know that we are now living in a time when flesh is really terribly polluted, and you just have to listen to the mad cow disease problems and the bird flu and things like that helps us to understand what Sister White has written there. But as the educational process takes place in people's lives, and they're still eating meat, as they come to this message, we have to let the truth gradually help them to be able to discard these things. And I find it very fascinating that in Sister White's time, people who were church members were found to be using tobacco, and they worked with them for years to help them put it away instead of just chopping off them off from church membership. And these are all very interesting object lessons that I have seen, that our attitude as church members needs to be educational and showing the courtesy and the tenderness and the kindness of Jesus in helping people to come into the full standards of God's kind of health. So with that, and everything we have studied in the past, I now open the meeting to for your participation, for your questions, for your queries that we can sort of maybe need to explain some more details that I hadn't done through the lectures. So is there anybody? I've got a page of about 5 questions here. I'll just wonder though if there's any others before we I read these. Is there anyone that's come here with some questions? Yeah. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Why we don't use black pepper? Is that the question?
Yes.
Such like the curry. There is the cayenne peppers,
yes, okay.
which are not now there are plants that are poisonous plants. Everybody will agree with you.
Yes.
And there are different stages of irritating plants. And the black peppers are actually irritants. There are other kind of herbs and spices that are irritants. Now they will agree with you there might be plants, but they can be detrimental to you. That's the way to reason with them. Just because they're plants doesn't mean they're right. I mean, they recognize that if you go along and deal with the poppy seed, that you can become hallucinogenic. They agree with you on that. Or the marijuana plant. That's a plant that's got dangerous properties. And so also has the ground peppers and things like that. So we have to be careful and intelligent as to the things we use to understand their effect on our bodies. And so for anything that is irritating to the stomach linings, that is bewildering to the nervous system, we don't touch that. It's like tobacco. That's a weed. So we won't touch things that are actually doing us obvious harm. That's right. And that's why we have Sister White's writings, to help us to then reason from cause to effect. She uses the word pepper as being an irritant. She uses the word saleratus as being irritant to the stomach as well, which is sodium bicarbonate, which is also irritant to the stomach. It's interesting actually that some people use sodium bicarbonate to apparently ease their stomach, and yet it's an irritant to the stomach, you know. It's a good cleaner, that's right, you use it to clean it. Yeah, that's right. Well, if it does things like that, it'll imagine what it does to your stomach. So, these are all things that are destructive to the... It depends on where it's sourced. That's what we often do when we look at the different minerals and so on that are available. You look at where it comes from. Now, I don't know. Does it come from aluminium? I'm not sure. Yeah, it's always very important that whatever we hear, we carefully research to be sure that it's not just somebody's suggestions. That's always an important
thing.
If it's written on it, yeah, but that's a different thing. You always check what's written on there. Okay. Yes. That's right. It is known to be so. That's why we don't use aluminium. Yeah. We use stainless steel or enamel, things like that. Because it is definitely deleterious to our health. Yeah. Aluminium. Sister. Chili, in all my reading, I haven't been able to read that those capsicum chilies are irritants. The really, really hot, the extra hot chilies, it has been brought to my attention that they are irritants. But then I read in other natural writers' books that it isn't. So I'll settle down for the cayenne pepper for safety's sake, because that is definitely known to be non-irritant. But I don't, you know, I've seen people put cayenne pepper into their eyes, but I haven't seen them use chilies to put in their eyes. So we've got to use a little bit of sort of judgment as to how far we go. I know the Indian race eats chilies galore, you know, but with everything I've read, I would rather go for the cayenne pepper than the chili.
Well, I go for the cayenne pepper when I'm starting.
Yeah. Yes, it is a natural stimulant. That's right. For people who have heart conditions, cayenne pepper is excellent. Yeah. Yes?
I think you probably answered it. On the issue of, I hear sometimes that people want to get their body alkaline, get rid of the acid in the body. Can we have that enlarged?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. During my nurse's training, we always tested the urine of the patient. And if it read alkaline, there was trouble. It had to read acid. Because if your body is alkaline, you will actually suffer disease. You will go down very quickly. Your body needs to be just above alkaline, just on the edge towards, I think it was 7.5 is the calibration, acid. Anything below 7.5 in the urine is dangerous, gets dusty, gets dangerous. So it is not wrong to have acid in your system, it's just the level of your acid that needs to be, lower.
Does that go for
what we studied was that to be healthy, you have to be in a low acid condition. If you are in an alkaline condition, you are heading for trouble. Yeah, well, that's what I don't know how well she explained it to you. The acidic level comes down from extremely acidic to alkaline, okay, or extremely alkaline. Now, our health condition must have the calibrations come down to seven, and then as soon as it's after seven, it goes into the sixes, and that's alkaline. Now, the health condition must be 7.5, I said it, roughly from memory, which is not 8 or 9 or 10. It's not so much all alkaline or all acid that is the issue, or half and half. It's the amount of, how's the right term? the level of acidity. And as I said, 7.5 is the healthy one. Now, so if people look into your eyes and they see that there's acid there, that doesn't mean you're going to end up with arthritis. It's just whether the acid is extreme or not. I've had terrible acidic outbreaks in my hips and my joints if I ate too many peanuts. Too many vitebrits and ate bread all the time. Then eventually I got terrible arthritic pains in the back of my neck. Or when I ate all these peanuts as a youth, I started to have hip pains sort of arthritic sensation. I quickly stopped eating them and it went away again. So that comes back to what we were studying, that in our diet we should have what Sister White writes, eating largely of fruit and vegetables, which are alkaline, largely of fruit and vegetables, and less of the other. So, of course, the naturopaths have gone into greater study on that and said 80-20, 80% alkaline food, 20% acid food. And if you look at one of the problems with too much acid is that if the acid is too high, it is removed out of the urinary system, and with it goes calcium. And a lot of people who have osteoporosis is not because they're not getting enough calcium, it's because they are eating so many acid kind of foods that all the calcium is being robbed out of the system, and you can keep putting in as much calcium as you like, but it's going straight out again because the acid is too high. So the idea is to not have a low acid system so that you don't rob your system of calcium. And I have observed that a lot of people who have osteoporosis have eaten largely of acid foods. And you examine your diet. In the morning you get up, you may have cereal. And you fill your stomach and make you feel full with cereal or bread, and then you might have one piece of fruit. What balance was that? That's more acid than alkaline for breakfast. Then for lunch you might have some savory, which is cereal or gluten steaks and whatever, different things like that, highly acidic, and you might have vegetables. In the evening you might have some bread again, or you might even have some pasta. This is something which I see a lot of the Italians live on, pasta, huh? And they love that. And you might have a meal of pasta with some small vegetables in it. What you've got is majority acid again. And in the evening you might have something more that fills the stomach. We always fill our stomach with the more stodgy kind of foods, which are often acidic. And I have watched people who've been suffering from osteoporosis. I've watched their diet. I've been in their homes, and they have eaten largely of acid foods. No wonder. That's what they subsist on. So the idea is to satisfy yourself with fruits and vegetables, and only have the additional alkaline acid kind of foods such as bread and cereals and nuts and things like that. This is the simple procedure to satisfy yourself with fruit and vegetables, not the other way around, but we usually do. And if you want to keep your children healthy, getting the acid-alkaline balance right, you'll often have to teach them to enjoy their fruits and vegetables rather than to enjoy what they usually do, all the bickies and the cereals and the pastas and the things like that. Children always go for that rather than for the fruit and vegetables, I think. And we actually have to teach them and train them to be able to enjoy the other things. So does that satisfy that subject?
Yes, brother. It's fitting with your reading that we had before, where Sister White said that we're so late, they didn't eat the king's meat, and right. Too much of the other stuff, you actually eat the king's meat, all done by idols. And the fruit and vegetables is God's food. Yeah. The way that our feet are made shows that there's a Satan were actually fruit eaters.
Fine.
And some of the, like, the strongest animal in the world, the elephant, eats fruit. So, I'm actually with you here about your terminology. I might just understand the same thing. I just have different terminology. Too much of the acidy food, I turn that as people getting a carbohydrate addiction, and they get fatty livers and get weight, throw on weight, because your body cannot stand too much of that, because it will throw on weight. Fruit and beef will walk in protein, we need a lot of protein too, and they're all alkaline. When a body's healthy, yes, you will be, you'll be just above. I've tried to get my, I've got these little sticks that I got from the,
Red is acid, and the yellowish brown blue is
whatever it is. I can never get mine to go alkaline, and I've done everything I can to get it to go alkaline. I've just eaten all fruit and vegetables, and I've gone on the fast. I'll still be acid, right? So, but the trick is though, when my weight, when your weight is in its right frame. It's okay to build up that, but if you start putting on too much weight, if you're eating too much acidic food, you can't have that. You've only got chlorophyll, chlorophyll, it's all green, and it's a liquid form, it's highly concentrated. I'm really happy in a way because you're saying what I'm saying, but just using different words.
Yeah, well, what you're saying is carbohydrates, they can be acid, they can be alkaline, because it depends what carbohydrates, where you're getting them from. But if you use the word acid grains and such like, which I'm referring to, we're saying the same thing as you say.
Yeah, because all carbohydrates, if it's not fruit and vegetables and protein,
Right. Well, that's right, but as long the idea is for people to understand what we're saying, that's the most important thing. Now, try and see whether people understand what you're talking about, you know, the Rio sister, yes. I've never checked my levels. I don't worry. Otherwise I become too self-examined all the time. As a nurse, I was falling into that danger, and I refused to, because I start to become paranoid about my health. In fact, to the point of eating freely what the Lord has given us, keeping the balance, keeping it simple. As I say, eat largely of fruit and vegetables, and small amounts of the acid-forming foods that we've touched on, and you don't have to worry. If you are highly acid, you'll soon know after a while. As I said, I knew straight away when my joints were starting to get achy, so I started coming down.
Not everybody can become, this is a danger. That's the pulse, the case to read. I mean, I've gone through a stage in my life where I've been through a stage where I've actually calorie panned, and I've looked at it, I just know it.
You see, that goes back to what Sister White wrote, that the general populace, the general people in the church should not worry and consider all the details of their diet. They should just eat freely the general food diet balance, and that's it. We don't all have to be naturopaths over ourselves. If you eat under the direction of the general principles that are given in the spirit of prophecy, you will find that you will be healthy. I changed my diet. When I read Sister White's writings, I accepted her as the messenger of God. I changed my diet. And I became healthier. But I didn't change my diet under the direction of naturopathic ideas. I changed my diet under the direction of the spirit of prophecy. Naturopathic ideas, physicians of the natural world, are there when you are ill to help you recover. At the moment that you go into those other areas of their detail, you're doing what I fell into the danger of as a nurse, that you begin to constantly be occupied with details that aren't going to change much this way or that if you follow general principles right anyway. The Lord will help.
Can I challenge you then? As a nurse, that's good. And you just had a statement that was naturopaths are there to work on things that is a problem. Is that what you said? I don't take notice of any naturopath or anyone. I don't. Okay, the doctor I've asked me, hey, I look pretty good for 54, they just don't like a doctor. But I also, this is where I find a lot of nurses and doctors, they like to see a problem, then they go and get a cure. I'm not saying they're doing that, but this is another situation I've found. What I like to do is use preventative medicine. I don't want to get sick and then have to go and find a cure. And which way in an employee where there's only things that are extreme.
Sorry.
You know, but I'm all just to balance it out. We all can get sick, but there is a difference rather than the cure.
And that is what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That wasn't a challenge. What you said wasn't a challenge. Right. What you're saying is exactly what I'm saying. The prevention is listening to the spirit of prophecy. That's the prevention. Not the detailed research into the food and its effect on my body. That is not the prevention. The prevention is to follow the instructions of the spirit of prophecy. We as a church practice that.
That is what
I'm trying to say. This is not a dictatorial thing. This is a educational thing in which we are being educated by the spirit of prophecy to remain on a level of simple, harmonious lifestyle that God has given us. He gave us the fruits, grains and nuts to eat. And he has given us the principles as we studied them together here. The natural laws. And if we obey God's natural laws, he says, I will lay none of these diseases upon thee. Now, as the general mind of the general people of God's church, this is sufficient if we obey God explicitly. What we see in the world around us is people who have not followed God's counsel and direction. They need the counsel and direction of people who have studied into the back and forth of natural healing and prevention, preventative medicine, and they are on a different level of us. We in our church have a beautiful, balanced presentation of preventative medicine. It's all there in Sister Wife's
eye. Sister Wife, we all know that we need to go fruit and vegetables. And Satan knows that too. In fact, if our bodies are Satan likes to attack the integrity of our bodies, because then that wrecks our mind and our thinking and our communication with God. So Satan is going to get into that too. So here we go, we all go for fruit and vegetables. Now, if we go to the supermarket like Coles, Woolworths, that sort of stuff, just bring it down to the our fruit and vegetables, we don't know how long they're going to shelf them. We don't know how much wraps from it. We don't know how much they're even starting to do some joining fruits together and putting different colours in them and all this sort of stuff. So if it's not safe to go to Safeway and get all the pesticides and all the fruit has been pesticided, it's had so much, just like meat, it's been devoid, and Satan's doing this, you know.
Sure is, yeah.
So what we do, we actually get our food from the country.
Okay. Right. Very good. Well, now you've just raised the point, which is a question here in these ones that were given to me by Sister Chris. And in question three here, it says, do vitamin mineral supplements have any part in today's modern lifestyle? Is there any real need to take vitamin mineral supplements for general health regularly or daily? If so, how would we know what supplements are needed? Is there any danger of bringing imbalance to the body by taking supplements? These questions need to be answered now, okay? So first of all, do vitamin mineral supplements have any part in today's modern lifestyle? Yes. Definitely. The very reason is because what you have said is that people who live on a diet from buying their food from the general groceries, greengrocers, you are buying food that has been grown from soil that has been leached. No matter how much they put in there, they've put unnatural driving forces into there, fertilizers, which has drained the soil of many, many of its properties that it would have if it was kept on a natural turnover. And therefore, the food you buy, the green grocery foods you buy and the fruits you buy, have not the kind of mineral and vitamin content as they would have had if the soil would not have been depleted. The other thing is that they have been lying on the shelf. By the time you buy them, they are 4 days old, usually. Yeah. So a lot of the food has lost its nutritional content. So for you to be in optimum health, you need to have the vitamin and mineral content that is necessary for your well-being. So we are told in Sister White's writings that you should grow your own vegetables and your own garden and understand how to produce good food out of the garden. Now, if you haven't got that, then you've got to take supplements.
And then you need to have advice or do a study on yourself, because you can create imbalances in your...
If you eat a balanced diet and you follow the guidance of the Spirit of Prophecy, you don't need it. But if you feel you need it, I'm not saying you shouldn't. Okay? You can do what you think, but what we have to do to present before the people as a church is don't become so preoccupied with so many different ingredients and additives in your diet that you become, well, you actually end up self-medicating yourself. And I don't believe that we should be educating ourselves to having to go to people all the time who have to tell us how to eat and drink and what medications we should take. This goes right back to what I shared with you the other night, that the Lord is our physician, and if we do the best we can, the rest is reliant upon our faith in the Lord to help us, to keep us healthy. In my experience of supplementation, I have brought up 7 children without any supplementation, none whatsoever, and they have developed healthfully because of the principles that I'm sharing with you were actually followed. And the only reason why one of my children was deficient in anything was because she got spray poisoned. So again, when she got spray poisoned, we had to do things to help her. Or when something has happened out of the ordinary, then we have to do something by additional supplementation. And I have seen this. I have been considering this subject when I came onto health reform, I was not very pleased to have my family on vegan vegetarian diet and end up like so many vegan vegetarians that I had met, where their little children were walking around with sticky little legs, legs like sticks. They were so undernourished in my observation, I thought, this is not health reform, this is the health deform. And I shared this with you in the course of our studies. So the issue is that we follow the guidance of the Spirit of Prophecy. I always grew a vegetable garden. I brought my children, when my children were on a vegetable garden, there was no disease in the family. When we ended up having to eat food that was bought, very slowly they began to deteriorate. I have found this time and time again. The food fresh out of the garden, you pull out a carrot, it's still screaming just about, and you eat it. You prepare it with fruit as we've done. Oh, there is something different in your homegrown vegetables. But if you can't do that, by all means, you need to have supplementation. Okay, Sister Dawn.
Well, I went to find out what I was lacking, and he realized I was lacking, and I went from there.
Okay.
And then the Lord, then the, when I mentioned,
praise the Lord.
So the body, if we can find out through blood suicide, that's how I found it.
That's true.
Out, it helped me to.
Very good. Notice that what the question was, if we do need supplementation, how would we know what supplements are needed? And there's the answer. If we do feel that there is supplementation needed, I should go to somebody who can test it in a proper manner to give the proper readings and then know what I should use to supplement. By all means. This is where I said, go to a good physician. And a good physician is a good naturopath. And I would suggest a good Seventh-day Adventist naturopath. Somebody who is not affected by the Eastern religious input. There's a lot of that going on. Is there any danger of bringing imbalance to the body by taking supplements? Is there any danger of bringing imbalance to the body by taking supplements? Now, I've heard pros and cons here. I've listened to many different teachers on this. And as I listen very carefully, I discern that I hear a lot of notions as well as fact. Once again, if you've gone to a good physician and he shows you the tests that have been taken and you see what it is, then you take supplementation accordingly. The only imbalances that can take place is, for instance, vitamins that are fatty, are dependent on fat to absorb, and they cannot be washed out of the system very quickly. And you can get vitamin poisoning of those kind of vitamins. So you have to be careful on such vitamins as A, D, K, such like. They are fatty absorbed ones. You never have to worry about vitamin C, it goes straight out, and vitamin Bs, they go straight out of the system if there's too much of them. Well, that's what I'm saying. If you're taking supplementation in that area, and it can't be washed out of the system. It stays in the system, and it can be poisonous. Vitamin E is the same. That's a fatty absorption one too.
But does that count when you're
In most people's cases, who are just living off the modern kind of foods, that's why they're putting them into there, because there is such a lack in the other foods. So once again, if you've got symptoms of something that is happening to you, then you again examine how the situation is by a good physician. But there comes a point in time where your system begins to balance out if you follow the exact instruction of the spirit of prophecy in the balancing of eating. In my observation, I have seen people who are very careless about their diet, that they get into problems. And I can see problems coming just by the way they're eating. And then afterwards it comes up, you know, after a period of time. So, as I said, follow the guidance of the spirit of prophecy. And if you haven't read it all, follow those who have actually read it and can share with you the balance of things. And that's what those in the church that are teaching these things are there for, to help us. One other part of the question, we've covered it there, that particular question. So is there any more on that particular line that you'd like to express? Yeah, some people say just in case, yeah. Yes, brother. Have you actually gone to check out why you've got a B12 deficiency?
Yeah.
What did they say?
I'm normal, I'm not long.
It's your absorption is there.
Absorption.
Okay. There are a lot of people, you know, vegan vegetarians, they say, oh, you'll be low in B12. But there's a lot of people out there that are meat eaters that are low in B12. So it's there's many reasons for a lower B12. Brother Glenn, Cameron, have you worked out, put this together at all, that you were talking to me about where you can find all the different nutrients? It is, yeah.
There are some that claim that the fermented products, such as soy sauce and others, are there. But according to the test that they've actually done, they found that the beef may not necessarily be absorbed by the body, and if it is,
there again, all these examinations, some of it has been tested genuinely, and others have just sort of, I hear so much. So, incidentally, when we first became vegan vegetarians, we were warned our children won't be having B12 because we were vegans and all the rest of it. And, we just prayed to the Lord, what's the truth on it? And just then there was a Seventh-day Adventist doctor who had studied this, and he actually studied that in the morning when you wake up, you've got that furry feeling on your teeth. He said, that's actually a growth of B12 there. And what you do is you wash your mouth, rinse it thoroughly, and swallow it. And there you've virtually got your daily quota of B12. And, of course, we never worried about B12 after that. And our children were never B12 deficient, apart from the one that was spray poisoned. The rest of them were all right. And ever since when I was 25, I came onto the vegan vegetarian. And I have never had any symptoms of B12 deficiency. And I haven't even gone to check. for over 25 years now. 30 years it is. And I'm not even bothered about checking. Because my health is fine. I've got nothing to worry about.
Yes, sir. I just think that it's right. The more patients that suffer, but it's also the same that a meat eater has to have more B12 than a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to the doctor and you do get a test, they're low, but they are seeing it as the level of
for the meat eaters. Uh-huh.
So if you're low, according to the doctor, it might not necessarily mean that it
mm-hmm.
might be normal for a vegan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, brother.
B12 is generally, with your supplementation, generally actually grown on a bacteria culture. So B12 is actually something that thrives on the fungus.
Yeah.
So if you were doing the vegetable food and you were growing your vegetables as such, these are actual vegetables that you're growing in your garden, if you're getting your B12 off that.
They're ground related. B12 is right. Ground related.
And even the other thing I have heard before is that B12 is absorbed through both the hands and the feet. So people who work in the garden every now and then are actually absorbing the B12 in through...
It's another one I haven't heard about. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, groundwater has got, especially that which runs through rocks and such like, yeah. That has B12 in it as well. Okay. Spirulina. Spirulina is a very rich B12 supplement, but it's actually a plankton, a vegetable plankton, which vegan vegetarians, if you buy a container, you know, about that big, it might cost you, what is it, about $40 or so, and you only need a teaspoon a day, and that has a very good supply of B12 in it. Yeah, that's right.
And also sanitarium, I got them to me right one day. they put in writing to me that their brain non-genetically
modified. Yes.
So they put that in writing for me on their letterhead.
That's good.
They certified that our brains are not
genetically modified. Yeah.
And it's really big clue in the alternative.
Yes, yes. We actually inquired into that as well, where they got it from, and it was from a culture rather than from from animal. Yeah. Okay. So, was there anyone else that had some questions? I've got. I'll read these other ones here. You remember the study that we had in reference to God is the one who will. Who will give us an indication of the remedies we use. And here's a question that reads like this. In reference to your example of your infected finger, you remember when I gave that as an example? How I asked, you know, finally asked the Lord, help, what else do I do? The question is here, how do we discern that what God's choice of remedy is as opposed to what we might think is a good remedy? Is it just by trial and error? So, when my finger was infected, I went for, without even prayer, without anything, I just went for what I usually do, is hot and cold. But it got worse and worse. And that sent me flying to my knees, Lord, what do I do now? And the charcoal came across my memory. So I put the charcoal on and there it went. It cured it. Now, in dealing with my finger, I did not ask God. I just went for, you know, it was just an infection, a little infection in the knuckle there when I was working with the roses. So I didn't go along and ask God for every little detail. What am I going to do? I just did what are God's remedies. And I chose one of God's remedies. I was already using God's choice of remedy. But when that didn't work, I then began to become concerned because the infection went into that one, into the next joint, and then it started going up there, and I thought, ooh, I don't like that, Lord, what do I do now? And so that was when I turned to the Lord. And then I used, there are many different things that can be used. They're all God's remedy. It's just which one is the one that's going to be working, which is the one he's going to work through. So we ask him and we go for, he will bring something else to mind. If we were merely applying these remedies without deliberate prayer, it only becomes discernible if one used to, and fails, and you then go to God specifically. He can then help you to assist you on another path. And if you go to God and then you may ask someone else who knows other remedies, you can then gain an indication through prayer and through deliberate search. God will bring to mind what is necessary. So it's not just by trial and error. It might have appeared like trial and error. It's just that at one moment I don't go to God over every tiny little detail, but when it starts to become threatening, that's when I say, Lord, what do I do here? Now, that next comes this very interesting question. According to your faith, be it unto you, Matthew 9:29. And I'd like someone who's got the Bible, if you could turn to that, because I want to read it in a minute. The question is, in health matters, or any other matter really, how do we discern the extent of our faith? The Lord requires 100% faith. In the practical realities of life, how do we know the difference between faith and presumption? Or even worse, if we have mixed faith with presumption, how do we know? Can we discern? So that's the question. Now, if you read that, please, Matthew 9:29, and read the context of it, about verse 28 beforehand. Just to get that picture very plain there. And 29. Who's got it, please?
You got it there, right?
Yeah.
See?
28.
Yeah.
And when he would come into the house, blind men came to him. And Jesus saith unto them, believe ye that I am able to do this. They said unto him, yes, Lord. Then touched he their eyes, saying, according to your faith, be it unto you.
Okay. So what is the plain impact of that statement? According to your faith, so be it unto you. What circumstance was that? Jesus was right there, and they came to him to be healed. And it had to do with a direct relationship with Jesus that this statement was used. According to your faith. Do you believe that I can do this? So, this is the criteria by which we try to answer this question. What is faith? Hebrews 11:6. Would you like to read that, Chris? Hebrews 11:6. Okay. Without faith, it is impossible to please him. So what was faith there? What must you do? You must believe that he is and what?
Oh, that he is and that he's a rewarder.
So faith has to do with diligently seeking God. So in our trial to discern what is faith and what is presumption, can you see here so far that it has to do whether you are seeking him and his instruction. Do you believe what he is saying? You are diligently seeking him. How are the just to live? Habakkuk 2:4, the just shall live by his faith. This takes us back to Exodus 15:26. If you will do my commandments and follow my judgments and so on, I will lay none of these diseases upon you. So what is faith? Believing in what God is instructing us. Turn also to Deuteronomy 8:3. I'd like to read that please for us, Scott.
And he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger and fed thee with manna, thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live.
Uh-huh. So, what is your faith to be governed by? To live by every word. To live by faith, which is? To live by every word that proceeds out of God's mouth. Now come to Deuteronomy 18:20-22. Especially verse 20, and then also verse 22. Got it there, Vera, please?
18.
Verse 20.
But the prophet which shall preach, I have not commanded him to speak, or that shall speak in the name of other God, presumptuously, thou shalt not be afraid of him.
Can you see verse 20 says that if he presume that God has said something and God hasn't said it at all, then he is presumptuous. And it's not him, it's not the Lord speaking, he's speaking presumptuously. So can you see from these texts that, as the question was asked, how do we discern the extent of our faith? How do you discern it? To the degree with which you believe what is written. That you go by what is written and not by your own notions and your own impressions. If it is your own impressions and you think that that's God, and I've read it to you a few times there out of the statement, that there is such a thing as having such a strong idea, such a strong personal opinion, that you think that that is the voice of God, and that is presumption. If it is not actually stated by God Himself, that is not faith, that is presumption. And you might say, God says this to me. This is what I hear so many people saying. God said, and in reality, it was only a notion. And you can actually misinterpret the impressions you receive from a thus saith the Lord. So, we go by the word that He has given us. We are to live by every word that proceeds out of God's mouth. And it's all written in the scriptures. And in Sister White's writings. And we are to go by those principles as God has said them. That is faith. And so when I go for healing to God, I go for the instructions that He gives me to heal me. And this is the way I have always concentrated my own life, that when it came to some really serious situations, I've had to go to the Word of God and to the knowledge of natural science, to which God speaks. And then there's the answer. And then I have built my recovery program accordingly. And I've had situations like that in my children. That's a big test. When you've relied not on the medical profession, but on God alone. With osteomyelitis of my daughter. With rheumatic fever of the other daughter. With these kind of diseases that are real life-threatening. And you're hanging on every word of God. And the Lord answered that reliance upon Him, because you've relied on the written word. And that's not presumption. Is that okay? And then there is the question four here. How much notice should God's people put on the general health recommendations of the world? E.g., women are so often worried about their weight and fitness. Well, with what we've just read before, have we got the answer already? How do they compare with the Word of God? And the common sense that comes from that, from God's Word. How do they compare? That's what you go by. And finally, question five, what causes a person to begin waking up in the middle of the night? This obviously comes from the subject of the Lord will give you sleep. What causes a person to begin waking up in the middle of the night for no apparent reason? When you wake up in the middle of the night and can't seem to go back to sleep in a hurry, is it best to just lay there or get up and do something? Very good question. Insomnia, waking up in the middle of the night and not being able to go back to sleep. One of the main reasons for this kind of thing happening is either heart fatigue or stress. And the body is often stressed by certain diseases as well. Well, the hormone imbalances will create stress. That can happen, sure. It is the heart. You've got a heart condition. That's all right. Praise the Lord. That's right. I can do that too. And I know that when I am stressed, my heart is under stress, my mind is overloaded, I will go to sleep with a slightly stressed mind, and I haven't exercised total relaxation. I'll wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I know what's going on. So I will put myself down. I didn't put myself down properly when I went to sleep in the first place. I was in a stressed minded state, and that's what, when your nervous system is strung. Whether it be strung by the heart, or whether it be strung by the mind, or whether it be strung by any other stresses, whether it be disease, whatever it is, insomnia is one of the characteristics of some diseases. Alright? And And so this is what will wake you up. When my heart was playing up, 1 o'clock every morning, I just woke up and I knew it was 1 o'clock. It was time piece. 1 o'clock I'd wake up, bright and cheerful. Uh-oh. Within 5 minutes my heart would race away. And then I'd be there flat. Now, that's why that was an extreme case. But we can wake up because of those reasons. So what are you meant to do? If your system is racing and you can't sleep, if you got up to do some work or to do some study because your system is racing, what do you think you're doing to your system? Exactly. So what you actually do is relax and put your trust in God and just relax and enjoy yourself in bed. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You are relaxing. And your body is resting, even if you're not sleeping. There was a man in New Zealand for 25 years, he hadn't slept a wink at night, for 25 years. But he was in a dark room, and he lay there all night, and he got up in the morning, as everybody else does. He had a nervous breakdown 25 years before, and he could never sleep ever after. But he lay in bed all night. And I talked with him, and that's where I got a lot of my understanding from, that if you, and I have seen other people who have gotten up and then gone back to sleep again or lie down again, and then they might sleep because they're not just relaxed, they're actually fatigued and they knock off to sleep. Whereas if you don't expend your energy, you are still resting and you are still, your body is still able to recover. Mm-hmm. Sister Chris?
Oh, what I was going to say, I've
done that too. And unless the Lord wanted me to, I mean, Daniel often woke up and the Lord gave him visions, but unless the Lord wanted me to think, now I've been woken up at 3 o'clock to prepare a sermon, that's happened. But when it's not there and I'm thinking, I get so brain tired thinking. It actually hurts, so I'd far rather stop thinking so that I'm actually relaxing. Because when you're thinking, there's a lot of energy being used. Brain uses more energy than most other places. So I refuse to think. And if thoughts come in, I just quickly relax them and lose them again. More thoughts come in, relax them, lose them. More thoughts. And I do that until I'm finally back to sleep again. But even if I don't sleep, I'm relaxing until then I can get up at my time to get up. The way I've written it here, you are meant to be sleeping at that time. That is the laws of health. You're meant to be sleeping. If you cannot sleep, don't add insult to injury by getting up. Because that's only adding more to the burden of the system. Rest your body instead of draining energy from it. Because you're actually going to drain it. Yes, sir.
There is a lovely place where you can use it.
Yes. Yes, there is, there's the herd, there's passiflora, there is valerian. Yeah. Isn't valerian something that you can get too much of?
No.
Yeah.
No. Valerian's okay.
I have read.
Well, you can't drink alcohol with it.
Yeah, I know that.
And
but
if you have too much of it, it can have a numbing effect.
Uh-huh.
Say someone just wants to sleep, the dosage for that would be, like a tablet, like that. You have 1-3
once a day, depending on the thing. Mm-hmm. And that can act as a relaxant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for
someone, if someone's got chronic stress, which means long-term
habits,
the insomnia.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It needs to be addressed. As I said, and a person who said that I was referring to, nothing was working on him. He just lay there. But he was healthy. It wasn't a problem. You're going to say something? Okay.
Come on, Rose, tell us.
There was another one. What's that chemical that's in the brain? Serotonin. You can actually get a serotonin in a natural form. And this naturopath that I was speaking to in Melbourne, he had a bottle of it. He just wet his finger, got a few of these kernels, put them on, and he went straight to sleep. It has such a strong, powerful effect on him to sleep. I must, when I go over there, I must see whether I get the bottle. Okay. But as I said, remember, God is in the picture as well. And Sister Vera can tell of a story there. Beautiful. Yes, Father.
Yeah, I started a year ago. I started working for a man, and the employment was all me. I started suffering a lot of nerves, a lot of stress. And I had trouble sleeping, and so I said, "I'll try some chamomile." So I started taking chamomile, and it sort of helped, but it didn't really help. And then it was said to me, "Well, just rest in the Lord." And since then, I never had a problem at all. I stopped. The only thing that gets me out of the night is my children. As soon as I put my head on the pillow, I'm asleep. And if I'm not, if my mind starts to race, like Friday night, my brain just started running. I couldn't stop. And I just do what I can't. But you bring me out of this, I'm going to sleep just like that. And like you said, don't leave the Lord out of it.
That's it. Absolutely. That's it.
It's not about sleep, but I keep talking about five years ago. I was supposed to have been a borderline diabetic. I was a doctor recently, and he insisted on doing a whole series of no diabetic, no high cholesterol. And you would not believe that I'm in my 80s. He keeps saying, no, you really said, sure. Because everything is so...
That's a real testimony of what the Lord has done for you. Praise the Lord. Yes, brother.
I just wanted to give a balance there. My idea is that we have to trust the Lord, because the Lord is there, but then Saul has the Lord there too, and Saul asked the Lord, what do you want me to do, and he sent him to his church. So I figure that as a balance out for me, balance is in my mind, yes, love the Lord with all your heart, mind, body, it's not the first four commandments of faith. Put God, don't forget the church, because God does work for the church. This is all, this is why we're all together. And as long as we don't quit the church.
Well, this is the very reason for our studies here. So that we can get a united appreciation of the messages that will make the difference in our life. And we have sought to do this all the way through the studies to keep the balance from swinging into extremism or into liberalism. And that balance is what I really want to leave with you, and that careful, of what we read right in the very beginning, that careful approach, that intelligent approach to the health understanding and the health message that we have. Don't build on notions. Don't build on impressions. Don't build on the inspirations of the world. Build on that which has been given under the jurisdiction of the Holy Spirit in His church. And we've got spirit of prophecy, we've got natural physicians, even in our church, in Europe, different places, and the Lord has helped me very much to be able to help people. When it gets to some very severe cases, then we go into those who have studied into them as well. Brother.
Reminds me that the Lord was, that the Lord had to swing on the part where Adam lost, the first Adam lost. And Satan, with all his craft, he knows that if we can attack the body, our bodies and that's where we worship God in spirit and truth. So we each need to really, God does use brothers and sisters, you know, so we all can help each other. It can't be put on one sort of self, it's just so important. Because that's where, if you lose the victory in the appetite,
exactly. Okay, well, thank you very much. Our time has run, so it's half past six now, so we've done well. And may these lectures that we have had continue to ring in our ears and remind us to go back to the Spirit of Prophecy if you've kept notes, and we've got the tapes and CDs and so on available from the studies that we have had, and go over it again, because we have gone into great detail on these balancing appreciations and understanding how the whole thing works. So thank you for your participation and your efforts to be here in these meetings, and let's go and share with others who weren't here the balancing appreciations that we have gained. So shall we have a prayer together in closing?